You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24. This week, we tell the story of Jonathan Self, co-founder of the pioneering startup Honey's Real Dog Food, a family-run firm built as a response to what Jonathan considered an unethical dog food industry. Jonathan's also the author of the recently published and excellent book, Good Money: Become an Ethical Entrepreneur, Change the World, Feel Better. Today, he shares a story.
Well, I left school when I was 15 years old, more or less. I finished my O-levels, and I thought I might become a social worker. So I went to work in an adventure playground. And my father had been a journalist and written about farming, and he'd written books about farming. And his idea of a good holiday was to go visiting farms. So I had a kind of yearning to try it out. The first job I got connected to farming was selling something called a warm water udder washer. And I used to go around dairy farms very unsuccessfully selling that. And then later on, I was in Australia. I bought what the Australians viewed as a hobby farm because it was less than 1,000 acres, and had a go at running cattle and sheep. And then later on, I moved back to Europe. I went to Ireland and I bought a small farm, and it had an acre of walled garden. So I bought myself a herd of pigs. I had 20 pigs, but they were not practicing safe sex, and I ended up with about 100 pigs. And they were fantastic. They're like organic Agent Orange pigs. They clear land fantastic because they root, so they pull out all the weeds. The pigs were incredibly healthy. I think the only problem I ever had was sunburn, ironically. In Ireland, I used to put ombre solaire on them, and I always had this vision that when people were buying the pork, that they would be saying, does this taste of suntan lotion to you, dear? So those were my pigs, and I was really madly in love with them, and I realized early on I was going to have to slaughter them. Back then, it was much easier to send pigs away to a small local butcher. So the local butcher would slaughter two at a time. I read a piece by Hugh Fernie Whittingshaw, which he said the best way to slaughter pigs is to get them drunk first, get them used to driving around in a trailer and get them drunk first, and then, as he said, they're kind of singing sea shanties on the way to the abattoir. That seemed fine, and I realised when I had 100 it was going to be impossible because the butcher would be dying long before my last pig was sent away. And in fact, the net result of the whole thing was I became a vegetarian. I mean, I was playing soccer with the pigs. I was out there all the time with the pig. I loved the pigs, and it would be like killing someone you've been on the same side as. I couldn't get them to learn the offside rule, though. I had a vet who was a homeopathic vet. I thought he was really sound on absolutely everything, except he would say to me, you should be feeding your dogs. I had about 6 or 7 dogs. I was fostering dogs at that point. So I had a couple of my own and maybe 5 guest dogs. And he said, you should be feeding them a raw meat diet in the wild. They would be eating prey, and that's what they should be eating at home. And I thought that they would choke on chicken bones, and I didn't really believe him. Anyway, I went away, and my housekeeper, or the kind of house minder, switched the dogs across to this raw diet, and I came back to find them all really happily chewing on bones and eating liver. And then I'd become vegetarian. That was a real issue for me because I was up to my elbows in offal every day, and I just didn't like it. So I looked to see if there was anyone supplying an ethical raw dog meat, and there wasn't. I'd been in advertising for a while, and I contacted one of my former clients who'd been something incredibly important with the corner office at Nationwide Building Society, and it was always saying, I must leave. And I said, what you want to do is start a raw dog food company. I'll be your first client. So she launched it at her kitchen table, and that's how it began, really. It was an accidental business. There was no real intention. I just wanted someone to make dog food for me. I think, so far as dogs and cats are concerned, there's huge hypocrisy on the part of almost every single dog food manufacturer. It went through the same kind of history as human food. So from the first dog food, commercial dog food, was created in the 1860s, and they were using scrap human food to make it. So it was blood and meal and grain. And that's not what dogs eat in the wild. The first person, he was actually an American from Cincinnati. He was a lightning rod salesman. He came to Liverpool and he noticed the dogs eating the old ship's tack on the harbour. And he said there might be a business there. So he bought basically waste food and turned it into dog food and got veterinary surgeons to endorse it. And really the formula hasn't changed in, that was 1860 he did that. So in 140, whatever it is, 157 years, it hasn't changed at all. They did it because they could. they knew that it was rubbish, and they used to pretend it was made from American bison, when, I mean, it had been nowhere near a bison. After the First World War, there were a lot of donkeys and horses left over that had been used during the war, and that was turned into meat by a company that became Kennel Ration, it was called. And that was really where the connection between horses and dog food started. So by really the end of the Second World War, as human food began to be mass-produced and convenience became everything, that's really what happened with dog food. And while it was going on, there was always people saying, this is not good, we should be feeding dogs a natural diet. And lots of people stuck to the natural diet really right up into the 60s and 70s. And by then, the big food manufacturers, dog food manufacturers, had won. And they were often companies, huge food producers, who were basically seeing this as a way of maximizing the profit on waste ingredients they would otherwise throw away. So dog food today is made up mostly of grain. It's made up of meat that's off and bits of the animal that you would not want to eat, testicles, anuses, ears, noses, tails. And what they do is then put in supplementary vitamins in order to give it its nutritional value. Dogs don't eat grain. You never see a dog chasing a wheat field. Dogs don't cook, so you never see dogs eating cooked food. And almost all pet food now is cooked and has grain in it. So, you know, they know it's bad for dogs. They know it's shortening their lives. In the same way, every species must eat a species-appropriate diet. So, for example, for the giant panda, it's bamboo. For the dog, it's prey. And the pet food companies know that, but they're making so much money they don't want to admit to it. We used home kitchen appliances initially to make it, and then we got a local butcher. The recipe, which we got a vet to help us with, the recipe was a third meat, a third bone, and a third vegetable, and we used to grind it up at home to create a kind of mince, really. The bone is really necessary. In the wild, dogs eat about a third of their diet comes from bone, so it's really vital for their health. And then as we got bigger, we were able to buy secondhand kitchen equipment. So the grinder was the same piece of equipment that would be used for making kebabs, for example, or hamburgers. So we bought secondhand equipment, and we were able to fund it completely out of our pockets. There was never any need for cash, and we never did anything to spread the word. You know, there was no advertising, there was no marketing. One person would tell another person, and people would ring up and say, oh, I hear you're making dog food and I'd be interested in it. So there was no promotion. There's never really been any sales function in the company at all. We were very keen to go against the norm. I'd had an advertising agency. Vicky was used to big corporate life, and we were fed up with it. We wanted a small, friendly company that was really looking after everybody. So it was looking after our customers, it was looking after our staff, it was looking after our suppliers. We were trying to do our best by the environment, trying to do the best by our canine customers as well, and that came first. The money was really unimportant to us because we were only investing money we could afford to lose. So there was the sense that if it didn't work, it didn't matter. There are a lot of terms bandied around, but to me, an ethical entrepreneur is someone who has a higher purpose. So they start the business for a higher purpose, but they make money from it. And it's very different to, say, social entrepreneurship, where it's always not for profit. I'm running a business. We make a profit. As it happens, we invest most of the profit back into projects that we're interested in, or we give it to charity. But nevertheless, it's run as a business. I grew up in the 60s. My mother was very left-wing. She was an ardent feminist. And we went on marches against Vietnam. We went to Greenham Common. We wrote petitions. We stood outside factory gates with megaphones. I came from a very politicized family in a generation when I think more people were perhaps political than they are now. I feel, and I think what's happened in politics bears this out, that people have lost faith in their politicians and that politicians are having trouble really making any difference to the world. So whether we're talking about issues like the environment or immigration or controlling the big food companies or the drug companies, I don't think government is really fulfilling its role, and nor is the civil service. And I think that as a contra to this, it's possible through, we've seen from the 60s onwards, that the consumer movement, particularly that kind of grassroots consumer movement, can make a real difference to what goes on. So businesses, instead of being part of the problem, really can become part of the solution. There's an opportunity for businesses to say, actually, we can do better than government. We can really help to solve these problems. We can innovate. We can tackle things long-term, which no government can really think long-term because they're always worried about the next election. But businesses can really think long-term. the message I wanted to promote was that an ethical business can make a huge difference. And I wanted to encourage people who were thinking of starting a business maybe to rethink their plan and actually start an ethical business. But more than that, I'm hoping people who already have businesses will say to themselves, actually, maybe we could do something with the business we've already got and make it more ethical and make a difference. So change the principles by which it's run. Without doing anything, we grow naturally by about 10% a year. We're really happy with that. If we didn't grow at all, we'd be happy. I'd be worried about shrinking because I think a shrinking business is likely to die. My dream would be zero growth, but you can't have zero growth really because you're shrinking at zero growth. So we grow naturally by about 10% a year, and I'd be happy if that happens. If more happens, that's great. What I'd really love to see is the rest of the dog food industry and the wider food industry look at what we're doing and say, actually, maybe we should change what we're doing. What I'd love is for one of the big dog food companies to turn around and say, we're going into raw food and we're going to really care about the meat and other ingredients we're using, and put us out of business. I would love to be put out of business. We started, there were three firms doing raw food in the UK 9 years ago, then there are now 70. We're still the only one that's concerned about the quality of the ingredients or who considers it the right thing to do to provide medical advice before you switch a dog. We ask about the dog's health, we ask about its weight, we ask about its existing diet, how much exercise it gets, its likes and dislikes. We like to have a photograph for the dog. So we are offering a very personal service, and we make sure that the food is appropriate to each dog we're feeding. I'd love all our competitors to be doing the same, if you can call them competitors.
Thanks to Jonathan Self from Honey's Real Dog Food. And you can pick up his new book, Good Money, Become an Ethical Entrepreneur, Change the World, Feel Better. This show is edited by Christy Evans. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Thanks for listening.